This week, or last week, sorry, the EU has passed the Artificial Intelligence Act, which, yeah, it'll apply to people or companies selling within the EU and also companies selling to EU customers. But basically, it's going to protect how people use AI. It's going to start in as little as 6 months, might be up to 24 months, but it's similar to the GDPR in how it's being applied. So that will be another one to watch, which is trying to rein in AI to the extent of making it safe. So next big trend, the one that I saw at least, was that there's a coming convergence of technologies. And so we talked about AI being the everything engine, and it is fundamental, it's underlying everything. But there's still a bunch of other technologies which we've spoken about. They've been around for a little while now, but it feels like they're really starting to come together and even accelerate under AI. So just here's a couple. So you've got mixed reality, which is virtual reality, augmented reality, all of those things, and spatial computing. There's robotics. There's the blockchain and the distributed web. You got 3D printing. There's biotech. And then there's things like 5G sensors and the Internet of Things. A lot of these technologies have been around for a long time, but it feels like they're all coming to a point where they're becoming really practical and useful, and they're all working off each other. And like I said, the AI is accelerating it all. It's the rising tide that is lifting all ships. And so I think I mentioned before that AI, for example, in the biotech space, or just in genomics and medicine, it's sifting through all these data sets, recognizing these trends. I posted probably a couple of months ago that one of Google's has found something like 2 million new chemical compounds, which would have taken researchers 800 years to find. It's doing things like that. With space science, it's similar, sifting through huge amounts of data sets going back to the 70s and 80s, and it's finding all these new stars or black holes. And even things like the blockchain, which the blockchain and AI are opposite domains in many respects. So AI is more about being centralized. It's monopolized into companies and individuals, and there's not a lot of transparency. But blockchain is decentralized. It's about individual ownership and full transparency. But even the two are working really well together. And the founder of Ethereum has put forward his vision of how AI and blockchain could work together. That's an interesting read as well, because I think those two technologies will be the future of the web.
Yeah, for sure. I can agree with that.
But at the same time, there's also some technologies where it's still hype. And two of them, which at least I've heard a lot about, quantum computing is one, and autonomous vehicles or self-driving vehicles. These are the two big ones where they're not anywhere near, I think, as what we think they are. And when I say we, I'm probably talking about the layperson. People in the industries would be fully aware. But quantum computing, look, to be honest, I went to the quantum computing session and I understood half the words. I was trying to keep up, but there's just some, just the concepts are completely different. And it's not, a quantum computer isn't just a faster version of a classic computer. And from what what they said, it's going to be decades, years, or at least decades before quantum computers are used in a similar way to how they're being used, or how classic computers are being used today. So that's one. But when it does come, that's going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, they're super expensive though as well currently. And no one's really thought of an actual use case either, I think, is the issue with quantum computing. There's not many actual reasons other than to run a potentially huge AI maybe one day, which would be amazing. Actually, the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy computer that they go to and ask what is the meaning of life to. I'm not sure if you've seen that. That's insane.
I haven't. It's on the list, actually. There's another show called Devs. I don't know if you've seen Devs, but no. I don't want to spoil too much, but they have a quantum computer in that, which it can look at history
Sorry, you haven't seen the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
No, it's on the list.
What?
I know, it's an old movie. I'll get to it.
Oh my God, dude, it's right up your alley. I'm telling you, you'd love it.
It's on the list. I'll get to it.
It's a book, but the movie is good. It's very good. Sorry. Keep going.
No, that's right. Anyway, another show called Devs. That's a really good one to watch as well. It's an interesting look at how a quantum computer could predict the future because it's so powerful that it can compute every single variable that might happen. So the other one, autonomous vehicles, just to keep us moving, that's another one which is still a long way off. The father of autonomous vehicles, Anthony Lewandowski, he was one that I saw speak. And he said a few things which were quite cool, is that with an autonomous vehicle, you can't have it to be 95% done. Like you can't release it 95% because it might crash three times on the way home. And that's different from software, which you can release at any point and then just update it as you go. But with autonomous vehicles, it needs to be 100%. But how do you get it to 100% without being able to test it? So I think there's some interesting challenges there. He also said it's like we don't have a sensor problem. So it's not the fact that we don't have the sensors. It's an intelligence problem. So it's the car not being intelligent enough to make those decisions that we humans make, you know, based on something happening that we don't expect. And so just because there's so many variables, that's what's making AV challenging. And maybe, you know, with AI, again, that's going to be the thing that instead of programming every single variable, it'll just be able to, on the fly, work out what to do next. So he did say at this point, he changed the problem. So instead of the problem of solving self-driving cars on the everyday road, he's shifted to solving mining problems. And what he said makes sense. AVs make sense where it's dull, dangerous, and dirty. So it's dull. You think about mining, they go up and down the same kilometer track, you know, for a 10-hour shift. It's dangerous. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. And it's dirty. Again, literally working with dirt. So I think that's an interesting move. He did say that he thinks by 2030, I think 2030 or within 10 years, that 50% of farm equipment will be autonomous, not self-driving, but they'll be autonomous. So it is coming, but it's probably not how we think. It's probably more in those areas outside of the main roads.
Yeah, that's good. I think it's really good.
Yeah, and the other, but there was some really cool, almost utopian level stuff with autonomous vehicles. There's the whole, you order it, it comes to pick you up, it takes you to destination, and then it drives off and goes, gets the next person.
Do you know what I like to call that?
What?
A train.
Yeah, but the train can't come to your house.
But yeah, I don't know. I live in London. It's, you don't even notice because the transport system is so good here that there's tube stations everywhere. There's buses everywhere. Do you know what I mean? It's like the autonomous thing doesn't give it any competitive advantage really in my mind. That's what I'm saying. It's like trains. I feel like train is a great example of something that should be and could be and probably already is or autonomized.
Yeah.
Right? And is that the right word? Yeah.
Look, that mass transit is definitely a key part of the future of transport. It definitely needs to be. What they call this is personal rapid transport, because there are instances where a train won't take you exactly where you need to go, or you need to take two or three trains to get where you need to go. You also have other people sitting next to you, so it's not personal. And so with autonomous vehicles, you've got this personal cabin, let's call it, which can take you directly from point A to B instead of indirectly through mass transit. But like I said, mass transit will still be a key part of the future of transport. But what they talked about is in a vehicle, even today, a vehicle, the journey from A to B is a moment to pause in a hectic life. And it's a chance to reflect and reset. And you think about it now, if you're driving, you sing a song or you listen to a podcast or you talk to yourself or whatever it might be. But building on that within an autonomous vehicle, and it can basically, its point would be to get to your destination or arrive at your destination with a better feeling than when you left. And so the cabin itself could be modularized. For example, you could order a yoga studio AV. So the car arrives and it's got enough room for a yoga mat. And literally on the way to your destination, you can be doing yoga. Or you could set one up, which is a meeting room AV, which has got a desk, it's got AV and video conferencing equipment. And literally you can be doing your meeting from point A to B. And it can use biometrics, it can use other external information like the weather or your schedule, and it can create an environment within this module, like I said, that helps you arrive feeling better than when you left. And somebody said in one of those sessions that a $70,000 car sounds expensive until we consider another room in our house, which I thought was really good as well. So look, with autonomous vehicles, there is that utopian view, but it's still quite a way off. And last thing just on vehicles is that I saw the Cybertruck. It is definitely real, in case anyone was wondering. All right, and then the fifth one that I wanted to cover was that it's around climate is a critical core challenge. Again, I did go to some specific sessions around environment, sustainability, but it was another one of those things similar to AI where it was just bubbling under the surface for all the other sessions that I attended. There's this recognition that not only do we need to do something, but it's become pretty urgent. And a number of sessions I went to, and one being transport, I think. Transport's an area where there's a lot of action taking place. Autonomous vehicles being one, but again, that's a little far away. The more immediate opportunity is obviously around EVs, electric vehicles, and electrification. Now, I didn't go to those specifically because I'm, like I said, already across a lot of that. But one I went to was the Uber CEO, and he spoke about their plans. And the main point I wanted to bring up here is that their plan is to become carbon neutral by 2030 in the US, Canada, and the EU, and 2040 everywhere else around the world. And just their ambition is to basically be the mode of transport for everyone, the secondary mode of transport. So mass transit, like we said before, is the backbone. But anything outside of that, Uber wants to be that mode of transport. They're encouraging people to get rid of their second car. They're doing it. They're doing rideshare at the moment, but they're also in car share. They're exploring autonomous vehicles. But it's not only transport that they want to dominate. They also want to dominate deliveries. And so you think about anything being delivered from point A to B, whether it's a business package, whether it's groceries, anything that's habitual, they really want to dominate those two spaces as well. And if you can have a company that is going to become carbon neutral in, 6 years across their huge fleet, and they're doing it across deliveries and transport, which are two of the biggest contributors to climate and climate emissions, it's pretty powerful, I think.
Yeah, I think, that sounds like a really good idea for Uber to break into the sort of delivery space. I think Amazon will be a tough competitor though, seeing as Amazon do a lot of their own, they own the whole supply chain. And I can also add that Uber here in London have recently introduced trains into the app. So you can book the train on the app as well. They also, on another fun note, they also have boats here in the Thames. You have Uber boats.
There you go. But yes, you're right. They're starting to integrate more and more modes of transport into their app. And that's mobility as a service, so that you can book everything. You can plan, book, and pay everything within the one app. Funny you mention Amazon, because their goal is to out Amazon. So instead of next day deliveries, they want next hour deliveries. So there will be a coming fight on that front.
It'll be interesting how they do that carbon neutral. That's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, look, it'll be a combination. So they're pushing all of their vehicles to be EVs, which means there'll be zero tailpipe emissions, but then it's your supply chain and other emissions. And we don't need to get into scope 1, 2, and 3, but scope 1 emissions is probably what they're aiming for, to be carbon neutral, but all their operations, they'll probably offset. And then it's how you work with partners through the supply chain and other areas to reduce those emissions as well.
I don't know why all these companies, it's because of the climate agreement or whatever that happened over the last year or something like that, like around all the countries saying they have to hit their 2030, 2050 targets or whatever. I think it's good to see companies coming out now being like, we've got a goal, we're going to do this. Google was carbon neutral in 2008. Like, do you know what I mean? Like a lot of the big banks in the world also were carbon neutral like 10, 20, 15 years ago. Do you know what I mean? I'm just amazed to see all these companies coming out now being like, we're going to be carbon neutral by this time. You're literally like 20 years late.
There are good corporate citizens, and then there are others who are being forced, or it's not been a priority. But yeah, it's at a point where we need to do, or everyone, companies, individuals, we need to be doing this. There's just a couple more on the electrification of the climate. It touches on AVs as well. A really cool company called Glideways. They're in the US only at the moment, but it's a really interesting example of this kind of autonomous ecosystem. So they've just got these small autonomous electric cabins. And at this point, they just drive between two destinations. For example, they've got one which goes between an airport and like a major bus or train station, I think, but they fit in a bike lane. So basically you create this bike lane from point A to B, which only takes up a couple of meters wide. And they've got these autonomous vehicles going up and down, just taking individuals back and forth. And the reason they're shifting to that is in cities where you can't install a railway or this big infrastructure, which are inflexible, you can just very quickly install these small bike lanes and still achieve that same result. So I think that, look up Glideways if you get a chance, GlydWays. That's a really cool example of what a future might look like.
I love that. I actually love that. That'd be really good here in London as well. Big biking community here.
Yeah. Now there's two other things I just want to bring up on the climate side. One of the best lines I took away was actually from a meetup, and someone said we've moved from human-centered design to earth-centered design, which I thought was a really interesting quote. Now, some listeners may not have come across human-centered design before, but basically it's the approach to problem solving that focuses on really understanding the needs, the behaviors, the motivations of the people using the product or service. I know that sounds like, why hasn't that been done before? But often innovation comes from the business problem as opposed to the custom problem. But so what the person that I met was saying is that it's even moved from that human-centered design to earth-centered design. And I think that just really sums up this point around the fact that we realize that everything that we do needs to have that sustainability angle to it. And the last one, so I mentioned before that I saw a session with Seth Green, the actor, and the session he was at, so he was hosting, he was at Ben Lamb from Colossal Bioscience. So have you heard about the company bringing back the woolly mammoth?
I sure have. Big fan.
Yeah. So that's this company. And they were just talking about how they've uncovered, I think it was some gene or something within cloning of elephants. And that's something that hadn't been cracked before. And that's by doing, that's what's going to enable them to bring back the woolly mammoth. But yeah, they're talking about how they can bring back a whole bunch of species that have gone extinct or endangered through climate change. So it's not just bringing back everything. One, that wouldn't be an efficient use of resources, but also there's the whole survival of the fittest argument. So it's not everything. But one thing,
bringing back an apex predator and they just kill us.
Yeah, well, I don't think they're going to do that. Yes, bring back the T-Rex. But someone in the audience got up, because you could go up and ask questions for all of these sessions. And someone got up and said, could we, with this technology, if we found life on another planet, say we found life on Mars, could we bring it back if it was extinct? And the answer was basically yes, if the conditions were right. Like, how cool is that?
That is very cool. That is huge. That's so interesting. But then yeah. I'm just imagining like us just finding some sort of life and then basically using that life to create a new life. And then we create the alien and then we're like their gods and then they worship us. Right?
It's you and your world domination plans.
I was saying that's what would happen.
Yeah. I just thought that was a really interesting question and I would never have thought of that. But yeah. So look, that kind of sums everything up. So I'll just quickly touch on those things again. So the first, South by Southwest, it's overwhelming and exhausting, but it's a rewarding experience. I think the difference in the US is the culture and that failure isn't the opposite of success. AI is the everything engine. It's a foundational change to everything we're doing. There's a coming convergence of technologies. These technologies have been around for a long time, but they're all coming together all at the same time. And I think that they're all combined going to have these profound effects on society and what we do. And then the last is that climate is this critical core challenge, and it is an urgent problem that we all need to do something towards, but there is still some hope and some really cool things that are happening in that space. So that basically sums me up.
Awesome. Let's wrap it up there. And that's the pod.
It's the pod.